New Year's Visitor. It was quite early New Year's morning, and Rosie was fast asleep, having odd dream after odd dream. In one, she threw the rake across the room and broke it in two, only to watch it materialize into the body of Neville Longbottom, severed in half. In another, William shouted a killing curse at Elizabeth, who promptly fell over dead into her plate of mashed potatoes. And in a third, Severus Snape demanded she return the Lovage potion before he took 200 points from Gryffindor. She woke with a start, her heart pounding. She wasn't normally one to have nightmares, but she'd had quite a few since the breakup with William. She pulled her duvet closer around her as she gazed out the window at the crescent moon, wondering if she should talk to William, or even if it was worth the bother. He obviously didn't want to talk to her. He'd avoided her gaze for the past week and often did not even show up for dinner. A horrible piercing noise suddenly blasted from the ceiling like a bullhorn, and she angrily shoved her hands over her ears. "I hate that bloody burglar alarm," she thought fiercely. It went off at least twice a year, either through malfunction, mischief, the perpetrator almost always her younger brother, or a mansionite trying to sneak out without alerting Smedley, the ever-vigilant head butler and guardian of the door. "Can't Dad make it shut up?" she thought furiously. "I might as well just get up now." She sighed irritably as she wrapped herself in her pink Victoria's Secret bathrobe and descended the elevator, arriving to find a great room already full of bad-tempered, interrupted sleepers in their nightclothes. "Shut that bloody fucker off!" Victor, Henry, and Carmine, who hadn't been awake before 7:30 in more than a decade, were clutching their heads and looking as if they might explode with rage.
I say, what a god-awful noise!" shouted Sir Richard, as he and Lady Fanshawe, for once mercifully hatless, strode in behind Elizabeth.
"Why can't he buy a proper burglar arm?" Elizabeth yelled, and Rosie winced. William was giving her an awful glare.
"This is so cool!"
Timothy was the only person who appeared even remotely cheerful. He was actually dancing about the room with delight.
"We're gonna get robbed! I'm gonna see a real burglar! You're really lucky! I've been watching my spy tapes!"
Quentin stomped into the room with a horrible look on his face, Solange following behind, stretching and yawning rather contentedly.
"I'm sure Smedley will turn it off and we can go back to sleep," she told him soothingly, and stood on her tiptoes to kiss him.
This did not go over well with the rest of the crowd.
"Dad, the quadruplets are scared. Can't you do something?"
"Quit that damn snogging and fix the fucking alarm."
"I say, old boy, now is not the time."
Quentin stalked off angrily towards the entranceway in search of Smedley, but returned rather hastily.
"Get up by the fireplace and stay together," he shouted, but the whining mob just stared at him.
"Did you bloody well hear what I said?"
"What's wrong?" William yelled out worriedly.
"Get in a group by the fireplace and do it now. Someone's broken into the fucking house."
This had the expected effect of causing complete panic. Everyone ignored the directive and began running about purposelessly in different directions, shouting and screaming. Lady Fanshawe blundered straight into a wall. Henry and Victor collided with each other and toppled to the floor, and the quadruplets bounced up and down like frightened ping-pong balls. Timothy, of course, was not alarmed at all and immediately began turning cartwheels of joy.
"I'm going to get my hunting rifle," Richard shouted and sprinted out of the room, something no one would have thought possible, considering his age and girth.
"That's just excellent," Quentin muttered. "Someone's definitely going to die now.
Get by the damn fireplace!"
This was directed at Henry, Kenny, and Carmine, who were attempting to stuff themselves under a couch.
"Timothy! Rosie! Jamie! Get over here now!"
Solange, intent on the safety of her children, was the only one who had actually gone to the fireplace. Her example apparently inspired the others to rush up as well, where they made a great scrum of pushing and shoving.
"Listen to what Quentin's telling you! We have to stay together! Jamie, give those kids to someone else! We might need you to fight!"
The crowd was rather nonplussed when William yelled this out, but Jamie quickly handed the two children in his arms to Lady Fanshawe. Maybe he does remember something about the Battle of Hogwarts, Rosie thought. Or he actually learned something about defense from Lupin. It was certainly unlike him to take charge of anything.
"Everyone find something they can use as a weapon,"
Quentin shouted after favoring William with a curt nod. Timothy let out a shriek of delight.
Do you think it's really that bad? Maybe it's just some kids,"
Solange stammered in a terrified voice.
"Smedley is dead. Shot in the forehead at the doorway. Automatic assault rifle," Quentin informed them shortly.
"Where are those fuckers?"
"Right behind you, Quella."
Everyone whirled toward the kitchen, and there was a collective gasp as six men with rifles strode toward the doorway.
"Stay where you are."
The largest one, apparently the leader, intoned threateningly.
"We're not afraid of you,"
Timothy barked out in a disgusted voice.
"Shh!"
everyone else hissed furiously. The man speaking had a deadened, soulless countenance that made Rosie think of demons, and she shuddered and started praying.
"Line up, the lot of you!"
he demanded as Kenny began wailing loudly.
"They've got nothing to do with it. Just fucking shoot me and get the hell out," Quentin replied irritably.
Solange began crying, and Rosie put a comforting arm around her waist. Elizabeth was whispering something into her necklace. I guess she thinks it's rosary beads, Rosie thought with a strange urge to laugh. But this whole thing is just a nightmare, isn't it?
"Nobody's shooting you, Dad. They'll have to shoot me, too," Jamie shouted defiantly.
Much to Rosie's astonishment, she knew Jamie was a terrible coward.
"Don't be stupid," Quentin snapped back in return.
"We're not going to go that easy on you, Quiller. We'll let you watch while we pick off your family. Perhaps we start with one of these little ones."
One of the men walked forward and snatched Natalie right out of Lady Fanshawe's arms.
"Leave her the fuck alone!" Quentin bellowed.
"This is bad, this is bad," Rosie thought frantically. "He's really mad now. He's going to jump at them and they'll shoot him to pieces." She gave William a pleading look, but he just shook his head at her frantically. "I could disarm two of them," William thought desperately, "but then they'll kill Natalie and start shooting all the others. I could do a shield charm, but Natalie will be on the other side of the shield. And if I drop something on them, it'll hit her too. What the hell is there to do?"
"This isn't going to turn out well for you,"
a man's voice from the hallway stated coldly. Silhouetted against the early morning light was a tall man who bore a startling resemblance to William, other than his height and longer, darker blonde hair. He held a wand in his hand that was pointed towards the assailants, and the expression on his face made Rosie glad he was not pointing it at them. Elizabeth exhaled a sigh of relief.
"We'll be all right,"
she whispered to Solange in a shaking voice. "What? How does she know that? Who is he?" Rosie stared at the stranger, who was wearing a long black cloak that swept to the heels of his boots, along with a shirt and trousers that appeared rather antiquated. The six men laughed, but the sound was rather artificial. "There's something about him that's dangerous," Rosie thought, and she knew the men sensed it.
"And you're just the man to stop us," the leader snarled with an attempt at an arrogant sneer. "By yourself?"
"No need to bother anyone else."
"Petrificus Totalus!"
He snapped his wand in a quick and expert motion, and the man froze into a stiffened position and toppled over backwards. The other five, obviously startled by this, began glancing about the room nervously, searching an escape route, but Natalie was still clutched tightly in one of the men's arms.
"What's the child's name?" shouted the man from the doorway.
"Lupin," Rosie thought suddenly. "That's who he is. William's uncle. He's actually real. This is the freakiest thing ever."
"Natalie!" William yelled out.
"Accio Natalie! Confringo!"
Just as Natalie flew through the air towards him, the six men literally blew up into pieces before their eyes, body parts raining about the room.
"Brilliant!"
Timothy screamed, jumping up and down and clapping.
"This is better than Bad Ways to Die!"
"Sorry,"
Lupin said hastily to the stunned crowd as he pocketed his wand.
"Bit of a mess. I shouldn't have used Confringo, but that business with the little girl pissed me off.
Evanesco! Reparo!"
The bodies disappeared and the bloodstains and broken bits of lamps and glass returned to their previous state, much to the astonishment of the relieved crowd. Lupin began giving himself mental directions, something he'd trained himself to do in stressful situations.
"Don't look for her. Give the child back to her mother."
"Shh,"
he said soothingly to Natalie as Shala rushed forward.
"You're safe now. Here's your mom."
He couldn't help noticing Tim, however, who was springing from chair to chair, yelping happily.
"Damn, that crazy little kid reminds me of someone.
Where is she?" "Oh, there, sitting down in the back. Stop being so damn nervous. That was all over a long time ago." The mental directions didn't seem to be working as well as usual. Rosie, who had never seen her father so much as pat another man on the back, was stunned when he gave Lupin a fierce hug and then put his arms on the other man's shoulders and grinned at him.
"Hell of a show off, aren't you, Remus?"
A few minutes later, the crowd was milling about in animated groups, everyone whispering and chattering excitedly. Quentin sat down on a couch with Solange, who began sobbing on his shoulder. Jamie and Shala tried to comfort the bawling quadruplets. Kenny, Henry, Victor, and Carmine rushed off in search of alcoholic and or narcotic solace. And Lupin walked warily to the fireplace, where Lady Fanshawe and Elizabeth sat with shocked expressions on their faces.
"Lady Fanshawe. Elizabeth,"
he said courteously, and gave them a formal half-bow. And suddenly, he was looking into her eyes. For a moment, time not only stood still, but turned itself backwards.
"You fill up my senses like a night in the forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain."
Who shall it be then?
Nobody but me.
Is there anyone else but you? I'd forgotten.
Well, it's wonderful to see you again, Lady Fanshawe shrilled and leapt to her feet. You are even handsomer than when you were a boy. Elizabeth blushed and looked at the floor, and the spell was broken. Come with me, Lady Fanshawe shrieked as she yanked him off towards the breakfast table, and Lupin gave Elizabeth an apologetic backwards glance. No one went back to sleep, Rosie noticed, although Elizabeth seemed to have disappeared somewhere. The servants began cooking breakfast, which actually brought everyone back to the table, and Rosie sat down next to William with a look of astonishment.
Did you know they knew each other?
She whispered. He shook his head angrily.
Who were those men, Uncle Quentin?
Timothy hollered out jubilantly. Apparently, he was enjoying his best day ever.
Members of Al-Qaeda. They've been on me to do business with them.
I'd say they don't take kindly to rejection.
He smiled at this, and everyone laughed. There's nothing like almost dying, Rosie thought, to make everything seem quite funny indeed.
Are you a wizard?
Timothy, to no one's surprise, was the first to begin blurting out questions to their rescuer.
I am,
Lupin replied evenly and put down his coffee.
Ha! It's no such thing, Jamie yelled sullenly.
Although I really appreciate your help, he added hastily when Shala gave him a nasty look.
Who's a bloody wizard? Can't you see what's in front of your eyes?
Victor barked out.
What do you know? Jamie snapped rudely.
He's our uncle, William and Victor shouted out triumphantly.
Ah, he's an oral now,
Victor mumbled.
And he was the best defense against the Dark Arts professor ever. Even Harry said so.
Alpha Mumbly's old are, they may have come of the Order of the Phoenix,
Victor announced in a pleased voice. Lupin appeared quite embarrassed with all of this praise.
Would you please stop,
he muttered.
But I can't fight like he can,
William added sullenly.
William, I've had a bit more practice at it, wouldn't you say?
Lupin told him sternly.
Well, yeah, so you have quite a bit more.
You mean you do this all the time?
Timothy shrieked. He appeared so delighted and fascinated, Rosie imagined he would next ask Lupin if he could live with him forever.
Only when necessary. I have a friend who's head of Muggle affairs. He's kept watch for me on this house.
But... Everyone began stammering at once, some looking quite excited, and others rather confused.
Is it all real? Is there really a Harry Potter?
There is.
Lupin seemed amused by their response.
Met him at the Hogshead yesterday, actually.
Is there really a Hogwarts? Are all the books true? Oh my God, is that what I did to you?
Rosie asked William in a horrified voice.
Oh, I'm sorry, honestly. No wonder you got so mad. That was supposed to be our night and...
Well, why wouldn't you be curious? I was just being an arsehole. Don't worry about it,
William replied dismissively, but still did not look at her.
William, I've really missed you.
I'm not going to cry. Well, you shouldn't. And I shouldn't. I shouldn't have gotten involved with you, that is.
Didn't you mean what you said in that letter?
Rosie burst out in an anguished voice. He finally turned and looked her in the eye.
Yes, I meant it. But if I'm around you, and then you want to know things I can't tell you, and we get an awful bloody rows, and I can't stand it. I hate fighting,
he finished fiercely. Rosie stared down at her plate.
Oh, you know what? It's a werewolf,
Timothy shrieked happily. A what? Richard said in an aggravated voice.
He hasn't read the books, Lady Fanshawe whispered in a conspiratorial hiss as she pulled on Lupin's sleeve.
She seemed completely mesmerized by him, which irritated Richard even more.
I told him he should. I told him we knew you years ago, and he said I was going daft.
Well, of course I remember him coming around, Richard scowled. I haven't seen you for years, he added irritably to Lupin. Caroline's off a rocker. Thinks you're some character out of these books she's read.
Lupin managed to ignore both Lady Fanshawe and Sir Richard by answering Timothy's question.
I am Tim, but I don't suppose that would bother you.
No way! I think it's totally cool!
You're a werewolf? Cool, James. Lupin's a werewolf!
Damn, I miss that obnoxious bastard. Lupin grinned at Timothy and glanced over at William.
Bit like Teddy, isn't he?
Oh, more than a bit.
Lupin sighed. And now for the rest of the speech.
If the rest of you aren't comfortable with it, I understand. It's fine. I'm quite used to it.
Okay, that's over. Where in the hell is Liz? Elizabeth. I need to talk to her. Well, I want to talk to her.
No one here has any problem with it,
Quentin announced in his dangerous voice.
No, certainly not.
We're very grateful.
With breakfast finished, everyone began yawning sleepily, and Lupin passed around some chocolate, which proved to be even better than William's. No one seemed to have any residual effects of shock or fright whatsoever. Even Natalie began boasting to her fellow siblings about her brave escape as she jumped from the bad men and sailed herself through the air.
William, take Remus up to Alfred's floor, will you? Just fix it up as you like. It's a fucking nightmare,
Quentin added to Lupin. William and Lupin both stood up, but William turned away rudely from Rosie's pleading look.
Well, come on then,
he told Lupin rudely, but he merely gave him an understanding smile in return as they strode off to the elevator. Once on the 15th floor, they both wandered about shouting various decorating charms until the place looked identical to Lupin's own home.
I'll change it back before I leave,
Lupin assured William as he put the finishing touches on the bedroom.
Oh, please don't. Quentin hates this floor. He says Alfred's the only gay man he's ever known and absolutely no taste.
Well, I'll have to agree with him on that.
How the hell do you know him?
William finally spat out.
Why does this make you angry?
Because you never told me. You think I'm still a kid?
Well, you were when I met him,
Lupin replied evenly.
You were barely 14. I was worried. Your parents didn't know what was going on, and all Victor had to say was that Quentin changed quite a bit and was a terrible bully. Oh, and that this was a house full of bloody lunatics. It was awfully reassuring.
William gave him a sullen look and did not reply.
Anyway, I thought I'd check things out for myself. I had Arthur set up a temporary flu network to the fireplace in his office and showed up one day when he was at work. Well, I suppose it wasn't very polite, but I wanted to make an impression. Frighten him a bit, you know?
And did you?
Lupin laughed.
Don't you know him? He just told me he knew people couldn't get past his secretary to see him, but this was a bit ridiculous, and to please not get ash on his carpet.
William couldn't help but smile at this.
Well, we talked for a long time, and I explained about you, the wizarding world, the books that hadn't come out yet. He told me he liked you from the first, and that he'd watch out for you. We ended up talking about Victor and a lot of things. Found out we had a bit in common.
You and Quentin, William said with surprise. Don't get me wrong, I like him too.
Well, most of the time. He's got an awful temper, though. I know that. I don't know, we just turned out to be kindred spirits in some odd sort of way. Although we spent a good deal of time arguing,
he added dryly,
mainly for effect. He's interested in the wizarding world and likes to hear all of my long-winded stories, that sort of rubbish. So I drop in now and then and we play chess and talk about whatever comes to mind. Arthur's terribly jealous that I've got an actual muggle friend.
William shook his head and sighed.
Yeah, no doubt.
So why didn't you ever bother to tell me?
Well, it's just one of those things,
Lupin mumbled in a rather embarrassed voice.
I kept it from you because you were so young, and then as you got older, I didn't want you to know how long it had been going on behind your back. Thought you'd be pissed, which you are,
he said politely.
Well, not that I blame you. I should have come out with it once you were of age.
William began pacing about with his hands in his pockets, and Lupin watched him with a concerned look on his face.
William, what's happened with you and Rosie?
Oh, we had this bloody row. It's mostly my fault, but she's an awful temper, just like her dad. I can't deal with that shit. She's asking me about Elizabeth, why I hate her.
Well, you shouldn't hate her, he snapped. And why can't you tell Rosie what happened?
Right, I'll fucking freak her out.
He paced around a bit more.
But I'm bloody miserable. All I do is think about her, and now she's being nice to me again, and that makes it worse. Anyway, I've been thinking I'd like to come live with you, and we'll get back in touch with our world.
You don't have to live with me to do that. Besides, Quentin's been after me to live here for years, especially now that Teddy's older. I suppose he thinks I'm lonely, and Teddy hasn't anyone to play with. I thought we might try and give it a try for a bit, anyway. Arabella can watch the house.
Really?
William suddenly realized this was the first time he hasn't felt abysmally depressed in days.
Would you? Teddy would have loved him.
And there's those quadruplets. Well, they're almost four,
he added hopefully.
I'll have to talk to Quentin about it, see if we can work something out. I'm not living off his charity like some of these lazy fuckers.
William smiled at this. You might as well start moving in now, he thought. Quentin always got his own way. Elizabeth tried to play a few songs on the piano to calm her nerves, but quickly gave this up in exchange for a cat, a glass of sherry, and the soothing crackle of flames from the fireplace. I'll just see if he comes up to talk to me, she thought, and if he doesn't, then I'll know he doesn't want to. It's not as if we can have any sort of conversation around all those people, especially Victor. She finished the glass of sherry and downed another, telling herself sternly how ridiculous all this was. There was a knock on the door, and for a moment she was quite sure her heart had stopped beating. "Quit being stupid," she told herself heatedly as she got up. "Don't act like some pathetic idiot." Despite this directive, she found her voice shaking slightly when she invited him in.
"Are you all right?"
he said worriedly, and ran his fingers through his hair. "He's nervous, too," she thought with relief. "It isn't just me."
"Oh, just shaken up, that's all."
She gestured wordlessly to the settee, and when they sat down, he offered her a piece of chocolate, and took one for himself.
"I can't believe you still have that,"
he said seriously, gesturing to the necklace.
I like it,"
she replied a bit more calmly. The chocolate was definitely helping.
"And it has sentimental value for me. I didn't know if it would still work, though, or if you'd remember."
"I remember."
The room became very quiet, except for the soft padding of the cat feet. The softly padding feet of the cat encircling the couch. He looked at her so intensely when he said this, the two words seemed to hang in the air, fraught with meaning.
"What do you remember?"
she said in a small voice.
"Everything,"
he replied firmly.
"Every single thing.
I remember how your eyes sparkled the first time you looked up at me. I remember your long black hair falling around me when you leaned over to kiss me. I remember how it felt when I was inside of you, all warm and wet, and the way your skin felt against mine and the sound of your voice in my ear. Bloody fuck, so much for casual conversation!" They gazed at each other breathlessly for a long moment, and she seemed to melt into his arms just as he reached for her. He was drowning, he thought, in her scent.
"Liz."
He turned her face up towards his.
"I've missed you. I've thought about you."
It was impossible to endure another second without kissing her. Searching gentle kisses became fierce and passionate, and when she threw her arms around his neck and let out a whimper, he clutched her desperately to his chest, his breathing ragged. "Stop doing this," they both said to themselves.
"Oh, I shouldn't,"
she protested feebly, but did not move away when his hands slid up to her breasts. There was a stumbling sound in the hallway, and they jumped guiltily apart, moments before Victor staggered through the door with a very suspicious expression on his face. "Bloody fucking shite, why didn't I kill him?" "She's his damn wife, you asshole. What the hell are you doing anyway? She broke your bloody heart in pieces."
"Catching up on old times,"
Victor said nastily as he looked from Elizabeth's flushed cheeks to Lupin's guilty expression.
"And you're supposed to be a good Christian and all,"
he sneered at Elizabeth, who looked as if she might burst into tears at any moment.
"Shut up,"
Lupin snarled threateningly and sprang to his feet.
"Don't say another word to her."
"Tell me what saved me, own bloody wife."
"Yes, your wife," he spat out. "And you went about getting her in such an honorable way, didn't you? You backstabbing, godforsaken, lying son of a bitch!"
His voice was shaking with the rage that had been dormant for years.
"All right, I'll tell you I was sorry."
Elizabeth, who was watching the scene with a horrified sort of pleasure, knew that Victor had finally sensed danger when he started backing away from Lupin, who closed his eyes and exhaled, his anger dissipating instantly.
"God, I'm an idiot. She chose him in the end, didn't she? And how long ago was this? I'm making a total ass of myself." "Right, I'm sorry," he said numbly. "Elizabeth, I apologize."
He gave her his courteous half bow and exited the room quickly, feeling rather sick.
"Going out your own boyfriend,"
he heard Victor scoff as he walked towards the elevator and couldn't keep himself from pausing.
"Leave me alone!"
Elizabeth yelled and burst into tears, and he disapparated from the hallway with a bang. Lupin couldn't imagine why he was sitting on his sofa in a den that looked like his home but wasn't, with tears in his eyes. Damn it, why did she have to start crying? Well, whose fault was it? You know you want to jump on her. You know it. He did know it. He was, in fact, quite desperate with desire for her. That and some inexplicable longing he couldn't define. This is a mistake. You shouldn't be here. Well, she isn't happy, is she? They don't even sleep together. What kind of marriage is that? She needs to get away from him. Right, you mean she needs to get away from him and come back to you. Well, not like before. Something casual. Okay, maybe not casual. A girlfriend sort of thing. One where you keep your heart safely to yourself. And none of this is ever going to happen. She stayed with him all these years, hasn't she? Just tell Quentin you can't do it and leave. He stretched out on the couch and closed his eyes. It's no good, he thought dully as he tried unsuccessfully to drift off to sleep. I've seen her, and now I'll never let go.
The dinner table that night was abuzz with excitement. Quinn had asked Lupin to sit at the foot of the table, a chair that had been empty since Richard vacated it several years ago, stating he'd rather sit by his wife. He had never put anyone else there because he didn't want them to think they were of any importance, and Lupin's presence in the spot was an obvious message to everyone present. Everyone was chattering madly except for Elizabeth, who was very quiet and appeared uncomfortable. And the rake was in a near frenzy at seeing someone he apparently knew. Lupin kept laughing as he zzzzed frantically around the table and remarked,
"Remember when he..."
to William, who anxiously shook his head.
"Still don't want anyone to know,"
Lupin said to the rake, which earned him a few odd glances.
"So you think that bloody thing is real?"
Carmine hissed to Henry.
"Well, he's obviously crazy, isn't he?"
Henry replied, but not unkindly. He thought Lupin might prove to be entertaining, and Henry always liked to be entertained. And he was Victor's uncle. The rake jumped up and down twice, which apparently meant no, since Lupin shook his head sadly.
"Well, I think you're making a bit of a mistake, but I guess it's your own business."
"Will everyone please shut up?"
Quentin shouted and banged his crystal water glass with a fork, and the dinner table actually fell silent.
"I know everyone here is curious about our new visitor. Since he's going to become a permanent addition here, along with his son," an interested murmur of conversation started up. "Will you bloody fucker shut up and let me finish? Anyhow, I thought I'd make a few things clear," he added threateningly. "First of all, we're very thankful, Remus, that you were here to save the day, and I'm sure everyone will want to thank you individually as well."
He gave the group an all-inclusive glare. Lupin turned to William with a distinctly amused expression.
"Is he always like this at dinner?" "Oh, God, no. Generally, he's much worse."
"For those of you who've been living in some sort of time warp," Quentin continued, "you can read all about Remus and the somewhat skewed version of his life presented in the Harry Potter books. You needn't be frightened about the werewolf business. William makes him the wolf bone potion every month, and he's quite harmless. He's agreed to stay here with his son Teddy, provide me with more security for this house, something that's obviously needed."
"No doubt, dude!"
Kenny hollered out rudely.
"Shut the fuck up! Now, does anyone have any questions? Remus, do you want to add anything?"
Lupin set down his coffee and sighed. "Definitely. I'd love to natter on to a table full of lunatic muggles that keep staring at me as if I'm behind glass in a zoo."
"Well, I'm glad to be here, and anyone is welcome to ask me anything they want," he replied amiably.
"You're most certainly welcome here," Lady Fanshawe boomed out stridently. "We don't care about your furry little problem, as James called it."
Lupin started laughing.
"Lady Fanshawe, have you memorized the books?"
"Just about," she beamed proudly. "And please call me Caroline," she added happily before Richard gave him a dreadful scowl. "I've told you this before."
"Well, it was over 20 years ago. I wouldn't want to presume," he replied.
"So, we're very glad you're here, Remus. Hopefully we shan't run you off,"
Solange said with her warm smile. "Hopefully your sister will shag me senseless. And I don't mean the one that whines and bawls all day."
"This is the coolest thing ever! I can't wait to meet Teddy! We're gonna have lots of fun!"
Timothy squealed and started his victory dance on his chair. "Yeah, we're really glad to have you," Jamie and Rosie broke in together and promptly gave each other furious looks.
"Stop it, you giant freak! You stop it, you hateful bitch! Dad!"
"You did it again," Quentin replied sardonically.
Everyone but Richard, who had his arms crossed and seemed quite offended indeed, added in their chimes of welcome, although Elizabeth did not look at him when she spoke.
"I think this may work out,"
Lupin told William at the end of dinner. "As long as I don't look at her either."
"Don't know about Richard, though. What's the best way to win him over?"
"Play chess with him and let him win,"
William replied promptly.
"I don't suppose you mean wizard chess."
William just smiled at him.